What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And this week, we are continuing our Crypt Picks, where we are chatting some hand-selected horror films that are featured in our upcoming cocktail book, Cocktails from the Crypt, which is out later this month.
Yeah, this book is hitting shelves next week. If you're listening to this episode, the day that it comes out, it's available everywhere cool books are sold, November 26th. You can pre-order it right now, anywhere you get your books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, bookstore.org, whatever. And if you want a hand-signed copy from us, personalized to you, click the link in the episode description, head over to nofspodcast.com/go and support our local bookstore.
We'll also be doing an event with them, Raven's End, in Winnipeg. If you are local to us on November 30th, we will then be in Kansas City, Missouri at Screenland Armor, one of our favorite movie theaters. If you haven't been there for Panic Fest in April and you're nearby, one, come December 7th. We're having another event, but then also come in the springtime because we'll probably be there too.
P.S. It's haunted. All the more reason to come. Make it a dark tourism trip. It's not just a film festival. You're coming to see a ghost.
We'll also be having a virtual event on November 27th. All the details will be on our social media. If you are not in either of those two places, you can still celebrate the launch with us. We are super excited for this book. It has been a project that we had kept under wraps for almost 2 years now. We are so excited for it to be out in the world. So we are having as many parties as possible.
Goddamn, that's right. We're going to watch some horror movies and we're going to have some themed drinks, motherfuckers.
It is time. We hate keeping secrets. We're bad at gifting. We're bad at writing books and not talking about them the second we start doing it.
Yeah, as soon as something comes in the mail, it's like leading up to Christmas or birthdays or, you know, I like to get Kim a little something on Halloween because Halloween's fun. Also, it's our anniversary, so it seems appropriate that I get her something. But yeah, as soon as something comes in the house, it can't be kept hidden for more than a day. Yeah. So this book has been hard.
Torturous.
And it's so fucking cool. Like, it's one of the coolest things we've ever done. It's not just like, oh, we've got some fun interviews lined up for the podcast. It's like, motherfuckers, we wrote some horror themed cocktails. You're gonna love them. They're really fucking cool, including this week's drink. We built a cocktail called The Live Deliciously for Robert Eggers' The Witch, the movie we're talking about this week, and it is decadent.
Yeah, I'm normally not one for creamy cocktails.
Neither am I,
but
honestly.
We started, obviously, with a creamy base for this one because we absolutely had to do the decadence of, you know, wouldst thou like a taste of butter, a pretty dress? We needed to embody that in this cocktail. And we really won me over on the creamy cocktail thing.
There, so skeptical on it.
We have a couple, like, dairy-based. We obviously use a non-dairy alternative, but we have a couple creamy cocktails that have really won me over for the, you know, like, the Christmas season nightcap.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest surprises. Like, I've had some cream-based cocktails before, and, like, sometimes they're just, like, a little too boozy or they've got a little too much cream, so trying to find the balance was the sweet spot for these.
Yeah, or
they are
like,
some
this
of my
is,
favorites.
This is nice, but I will have one or two sips of this and I will not finish it.
Yeah.
But this one, and also, spoiler alert, we have one for Black Christmas that's also creamy.
That one's like a fucking dessert in a cup.
It's
my God.
They're so good.
Yeah, surprise, surprise, we like our own drinks. And yeah, we're going to tell you all about The Live Deliciously at the end of the episode. This week, of course, we're talking about The Witch. These episodes, this entire month, putting it together, has been the easiest month to program for the podcast. Because, like, oh no, we just get to talk about all bangers. Like, every movie we talk about, a movie we love.
I think we should just, going forward, just do the 60 films that are in.
We just do the cocktail book?
Because they are, like, obviously, hand-selected by us. There are 60 quintessential horror movies, we think.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, there's three Jason Voorhees movies.
You're damn right there is. There's also a Malignant cocktail in there because we wrote this book.
There's also one based on the Monster Mash, which is not a horror movie at all, but we fought on it.
We had to fight for that one, and I'm glad it's there. Honestly, maybe one of the best photos in the book. But The Witch, a movie we're all familiar with, I think. A movie that, frankly, and I might try and make a case for this later on in the podcast, maybe changed modern horror. Like, I was looking at
it
movies.
It was definitely the beginning of the quote-unquote elevated horror.
You can say it, the A24
argument.
Wave.
the A24 argument, the quiet horror films, and I think a lot of what The Witch did was, one, it's just a really solid film, but two, it brought a level of authenticity, I guess, to this period piece, which brought a lot of not just horror fans on board with it. I think this has a bit of a wider audience than your standard horror film because, one, it's a little subtle in moments. Yeah, I think that it's a period piece. It's done very slow and authentically. It really captures that, you know, like that Oscar-y audience.
Okay.
Thus elevated horror, I say, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's true. And more importantly, introduce the world to Anya Taylor-Joy. And Ralph Ineson. And Ralph Ineson's gravelly voice.
And fucking Black Phillip the Goat.
Oh, okay, so that's good thing number
three
one.
Three stars.
I'm gonna say it right here. Good thing number one, goat.
Man, just a fucking standout goat. Black Phillip is a phenomenon. Like, the devil has changed eternally because, like, we
not
just,
that this was the first time we had the devil in a goat.
No, but he's just a great character for us to just fawn over. yeah, just an iconic, instantaneous villain.
Yeah, because he's a bitch. Like, he's like...
It's all that goatee side eye. Like,
that's what I'm saying,
he's
right?
He's so fucking sassy. And also his mouthpieces, Jonas and Mercy, are just wonderful. Wonderful little deviants.
It's good that they gave these kids a goat, because otherwise they might be... well, I mean, you know... Kids can just be annoying, and especially this age, they're
they're little devils without the devil in their ear.
Oh, they're so evil. But we do get one of the best quotes of the movie from one of those kids talking about the witch riding around on her broom at night at the tops of the trees. Clickety, clickety, clickety. Okay, well, what's good thing number two? We can't spend the whole top of the episode talking about Black clickety.
Well, we kind of touched on this a little bit, the authenticity
of
the movie. Every single element is handled with a time period in mind, and not just in that like facade-y way that we kind of complain about sometimes with period pieces, where like the clothes look like farmer's clothes. They're worn. The house, the farmstead that they've built is rustic and shackly, and it's falling apart. But also the dialogue is... Yeah. So old-timey 16th century English, and it's done in a way that's more authentic, I think, than most old English we get. Like, most old English we get is just like an accent.
They add yonder or thee to
yes. stuff.
It's British with a couple words that modern British people don't use.
Exactly. Whereas this,
like, good morrow.
This, they're really, you know, be playing fast and loose where verbs appear in sentences.
Oh God, it's crazy. Well, there's even that little tag at the end of the movie that says that like a large chunk of the dialogue came from journals and court records. Like, they tried to pull dialogue as it would have been used back in this time,
which is really cool, actually. While we were prepping for this, I was actually reading the screenplay because there was a lot of dialogue that I really wanted to like nail in on before we started talking. But yeah, so some of the dialogue is actually taken from letters and stuff.
Crazy.
Like sentences that were a part of the, he says pre-witch trials. So like around like 1690 when they were doing the, you know, everybody's a witch, we're not murdering you yet, but we're getting real suspicious.
Yeah. The pilgrim side eye.
Yeah, I wanted to read this, though, and this is the perfect spot because we're talking about the authenticity. This is at the beginning of the script before it starts kind of just getting you in.
This is literally a, hey, just a heads up from the writer.
It says, to the reader.
Yeah.
This is a tale of witchcraft told as a simple family of 17th century New England might have believed it to be. All of their folkloric and religious beliefs in this film are true. It was inspired by various folktales, fairy tales, and recorded accounts, journals, diaries, court records, etc., of historical witches and possessions from New England and Western Europe before the Salem outbreak in 1692.
Okay.
Much of the dialogue, in fact, comes directly from these sources. In order to effectively depict this world in which ordinary people understood supernatural occurrences to be an expected part of life, it is essential that all aspects of the film to be carried out with utter naturalism. The characters must appear as real farmers, not actors with dirty faces. Even the supernatural elements must be photographed as realistically as possible. Yet, with all of this authenticity and realism, it is still a folktale, a dream, a nightmare from the past. And then it immediately goes into like black title, The Witch, a New England folktale. I was just like, damn!
Hell yeah.
I can't wait to finish this. I'm about halfway through. And the screenplay is, especially because Robert Eggers wrote and directed it, it's very true to what you see on the screen. There are a few different things, which I'll mention further into the episode.
Right on. Good thing number three, I'm going to say, is the score. The score of this movie is truly horrifying. If you're a big fan of, you know, I mentioned The Omen last week when we were talking about The Exorcist. If you like the Insidious score, this is... terrifying. Like, this is voices and sticks in the wood,
and it gets all of the right moments. The film is subtle. It does have some elements where it goes there, but the real weight in this movie comes from the score a lot. The score is like, hey, FYI, this is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, the score is the mood, it's the atmosphere, it's the emotion, it is... like, the instrument that they used, the instruments that they used for this movie is doom and gloom. Like, those are the instruments
doom,
that they use.
Gloom, black goat.
Yeah, I like to imagine that it's that weird orchestral satanic cult in the catacombs in As Is Above, So Below. You remember that scene where they turn
yeah.
a corner and there's just a bunch of people go like, like underground for no reason.
The thought of that scene keeps me up at night.
They make fucking eye contact with you. Yeah, like that's the group that I imagine doing the orchestral movements for this movie.
It's sung by witches.
Oh, it's fucking creepy, man.
What went we out into this wilderness to find? Leaving our country, kindred, our fathers' houses. For what? For the kingdom of God. Let us pray.
This family.
The Witch from 2015, written and directed by Robert Eggers, currently sitting at a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. Here's the fun part, 60% audience rating.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember everybody hating the dialogue. I remember
really?
People, I remember people not appreciating the dialogue. You love a period piece.
I do love a period
okay?
piece.
Okay? Not as much as some other people. And it was new. The pace of this movie was a little new for the time. It wasn't unheard of, but especially for a wide release movie, a little slow for some. It also has a 3.8 out of 5
on Letterboxd. I love that people are so like butts in the air about this. And then fucking The Lighthouse is just Willem Dafoe going yee for 2 hours.
I don't think the audience rating for The Lighthouse is going to be higher than The Witch.
Check it.
I'll check it right now. We all love a sea shanty, but I don't think people,
people love The Lighthouse.
But people hate black and white, and they hate the 4:3 aspect ratio. Okay, so Rotten Tomatoes, critics, 90%, audience, 72. Okay, fuck. All right.
Told you they do. Everybody just loves Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
And it's Willem Dafoe with crazy eyes.
Yeah, crazy eyes, crazy teeth, crazy beliefs. God, that movie's good. Okay, well, we're here now. We're already talking about his oeuvre.
Is Robert Eggers the best horror director today?
I'm asking that question genuinely.
Ask me on December 26th.
You don't think you can answer that question now?
I could.
You don't think Nosferatu's going to be fucking incredible?
I do, but I'm just trying to tamp those expectations. It's really hard now, having watched The Witch so fresh, and I'm like, damn, this is a banger.
Yeah.
I was right.
The Lighthouse is amazing. The Northman is so fucking cool.
Okay, those two I'm a little more lukewarm on.
They're weird, yeah.
I appreciate them visually.
But the swings, man. Like, can you not, like, come on. You gotta admit that he is going for it.
That's my favorite thing about Robert Eggers is that in the same sense that, I don't know, he's tapped into like creative gold.
Yes.
And they're letting him make his movies.
I'm sure every single one of them's a fight, but he's making it work.
But he is making it work. Like, yeah. I'm sure that aspect ratio of The Lighthouse, even just doing it in black and white, like, yeah. I'm sure he has to play fisticuffs to get some of the stuff he wants.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The fact that The Witch has so much authenticity in it is just such a strong fucking debut.
It's incredible. It's absurd that this is his first movie. And I think a lot of it comes, well, obviously it's a great script. I mean,
a great script, and it has all of the same dialogue and stuff. I think it's just because the script itself was so confident that you can kind of have faith in him to know who these characters are and what he wanted to do. And you see that in translation from script to screen, because the dialogue is exactly the same, but it reads so different when you have the characters' voices in your head.
Oh, like, especially Ralph Ineson.
Yeah, the dialogue reads so flat because it's old English. But then because I'm so fresh on watching it, like I could hear the characters saying it.
Cool.
And it really gave me appreciation for the actors, like especially Anya Taylor-Joy being so young in this.
Mm-hmm.
She has a lot of weight in her words. For being, one, like, a teen actress at that point. I don't think she was much older than, like, 17, 18.
I couldn't imagine.
And doing old English, doing an accent.
But also reacting to the people around her talking about, like, when her parents are talking about essentially, like, shipping her off and selling her to another family. Like, there's so much discussion about her faults and like what she's done wrong and what
she's a bit of a black sheep.
I mean, yeah. A lot of her performance is just sort of taking in what people are saying to her face.
It's true. So she does have a lot of like dialogue to chew on. Like it starts with that huge prayer where she's doing like, you know, I've sinned a whole bunch. but a lot of this movie is very quiet, and it is like a lot of how people absorb different moments. Like she is kind of in the corners of rooms and being quiet and biting her tongue because her mother fucking hates her.
Her mother hates her guts, but we gotta keep in mind that
she did lose a baby.
Opening moments of the movie, a baby's gone, and it's totally her fault.
I mean, it's not her fault, but
nah,
it
but
is
as far as mom's concerned,
yeah.
Like she's taking care of this baby. It is one of the greatest moments. I wish it wasn't in the trailer, but goddamn, it made us want to see this movie so fucking hard. Where she's just playing peekaboo with a baby, and we're in the POV of the baby on the ground, and then just snatched out from underneath her, it's gone, and you just see like the whispers of like some trees moving back toward the tree line. God, it's good.
Yeah, spooky as fuck. And what's so cool about it, and I kind of forget this every single time we watch it, how early we are given access to The Witch in the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Because we immediately, we are following this like red cloak into the woods, and we're taking that baby to her hovel.
We're turning it into mashed potatoes.
We're making magic mashed potato goo out of it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that scene? Because I remember when the film came out, that was pretty controversial.
I love it. I think it's so good.
Well, obviously.
Because it immediately makes you go like, oh, fuck, we're not fucking around.
Oh, we're killing babies
here. These are real,
legit
witches.
There are fucking witches in these woods.
Yeah, like, it takes everything seriously, which is, to its credit, is maybe also part of the thing that that people have a hard time with, that these people believe everything so wholeheartedly. Like, there's no question in their mind.
That's why they are where they are. They have been
this is maybe like my favorite part about this movie, that they're too hard for Salem, Massachusetts, basically. Like they're too Puritan for the Puritans.
Yeah, and they are, what do you call it when you're evicted from town? Disgraced, whatever. And they're kicked out of the plantation, the settler group that they're with, and they are off on their own. And it makes so much sense why this was a period in history where suspicions and the fear of the supernatural were being birthed, because, you know, like if your crops went bad,
you're gonna starve.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
So like, and if you're doing everything you can and you're working as hard as you possibly can, of course you want to blame it on something else. Cause like just being like, well, some years crops are bad. Like you can't survive if some years crops are bad.
You're dead.
Yeah. We're in a different period of agriculture where we're like, yeah, the potatoes are small this year. Like, no, you're going to die if the potatoes are small this year.
But the best characters for this to happen to, like story wise, like don't get me wrong, like this definitely happened to some real people, and I'm sure their skeletons are somewhere scattered on the East Coast.
It's peaceful, John. Peaceful lots.
But we have these people who are just like, we're God's chosen people, and we should be able to practice our religion, our crazy extremist views, without any sort of impunity. This is why we left England.
Yeah, and we don't even really understand what he's done other than speaking up and being like, we're not doing enough churchy shit.
Yeah, he thinks that they're... It's not specific, but like clearly he's walking around going like, can't believe y'all fucks are eating fish on Friday. Like he's doing something, and they're just like, this guy is real annoying. Like so much so that we're going to kick his family out.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so great too about this being them kind of being punished supernaturally.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his biggest sin is that he is self-righteous.
Well, yeah, it's pride, right? And like that's the reason that they kick him out too.
It's also the reason why he sins in his homestead, because he's lying, because he's prideful.
Okay, but this is why I think that they're such great characters for the situation, because they are like, you guys are wrong. We're good with God. We know what he wants. We're not gonna fuck around like y'all, and we're not gonna risk not getting into heaven. We're gonna be best buds with the guy upstairs, and we're gonna go off. We're gonna do our own thing. He's gonna smile upon us. He's gonna give us this gorgeous piece of land. It's gonna be amazing. And then for everything to go wrong.
I think
wrong,
Dad's thinking that. Mom and Thomason are a little bit like, this is a great idea, I think. Oh God.
I mean, Mom looks pretty happy when they find the homestead, and well, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, so they find their area, their plot of land, and it's like beautiful, it's serene, and then there's like this fucking scary woods.
Well, it's even just the music
that, like, just so happened to have a witch in them.
It's like that scene when they find the obelisk in 2001: A Space Odyssey, right? Like, especially on the moon. That is the scariest goddamn scene of that whole movie. But like, everybody's smiling, everybody's so happy except Thomason, and like the sky is gorgeous and beautiful. It looks wonderful. Like, you would totally stay at an Airbnb here. But the score is telling you something's wrong, and we shouldn't be here. God, I love this movie.
It is great, though, that they establish the witch so early on, because every time these kids venture off into the woods, which they do...
They're told not to.
They're told not to. And especially to Mom is very protective once Sam is missing. She's like, nobody can leave the farm ever.
Yeah. She seems scared of the place in general. Like, I don't think she... I get the impression she has had this conversation with Dad before when he goes off to go hunting, you know, to check the traps that he secretly purchased by trading her father's silver cup. She's just mad that they left her alone. Like, I don't think she likes being alone in there at all.
Yeah. Well, and also she's grieving too. Like, she's not sleeping.
Yeah, that's true.
She's not in a great state at most all of the film.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show like how exposed you are there. Like, yeah, sure, you've got your family and you've got your house and stuff, but I mean, it's in the middle of the fucking woods. Like, one, if your crops go bad, you're gonna starve. Two, wolves could just walk through any fucking time they want. Ugh. You don't know.
Yeah, and your like house is built of straw.
Yeah, you don't have like...
They fucking Little Pig you.
Yeah. You don't have these giant walls like you do over in the plantation. That's my favorite shot of the movie, when they're leaving on the cart and we just see like there's this bustling town and then the door closed behind them. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's a whole other world over
there. Well, and there's also like Aboriginal traders coming in. So it's like outsiders are still allowed in this town, but they're being kicked out. So yeah. it's extra isolating.
Yeah. Even the native guys are just like, y'all going out there? All right. I mean, good luck.
Literally.
Like they have that look on their face. Like, just like, it was nice knowing you.
And too, they're on like the ricketyest, smallest cart. There's six of them sitting on it. Like, yeah. They look ill prepared.
Uh-huh. How do you just go out with nothing and then start a farm?
I mean, but that's the period, though. There is,
I guess, they
nothing.
Already did this.
The plantation was nothing.
They showed up, they turned their boats into houses, and then they just kept going.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's fucking... I couldn't do it. Like, thank you, great-great-great-grandpa. There's like, nope, not me. Can't do it.
Yeah, I love a blanket. A clean blanket.
I love a toilet.
I also love a toilet.
I love that when my pants get dirty, I have another pair of pants and I don't just have to wear a sheet to cut wood while my daughter scrubs it in the fucking river.
Oh, yeah, they definitely only have one pair of pants.
It's crazy. It just goes to the like the period authenticity that you were talking about, because we know that the crew built the farmstead. Like, they literally built these houses. They made these clothes. I think a lot of that comes from Robert Eggers, coming to film from the theater world. It's like they always made costumes, and everything had to have a tactile feel if it's on the stage. Like, you got to be able to see it and believe it. And I've heard him talk in interviews about, taking that into making movies. And it's not just that it's something he wants to do to make his movies look different than other people's. It's just that this is how I'm going to do it, or I'm not going to do it at all. Mm. Like, it's just, it has to look this way. Otherwise, it won't be the same movie. And I think that's what takes The Witch so far. Like, the dialogue is period appropriate. Everything that you're seeing on screen, like, you might as well have just sent a camera back to 1960, like an invisible camera back to 1690, and shot some crazy shit that was happening with the family in the middle of the woods. It probably would have looked no different.
Yeah. What I love too about it, though, is that it's never boring. You assume, coming in with, like, you're like, oh, it's old English, it's old timey pilgrim stuff. It's not boring at all.
For 40% of people on their Rotten Tomatoes, it is boring. But that's, I know what you mean.
The politics of the family with their faith, like the cup and the lying and the traps. And there are inner workings happening with this family. Like, this family is unraveling despite the supernatural stuff happening around them.
Yeah.
Like, they're not paying any attention to Jonas and Mercy, who are singing devil songs the whole movie.
Who taught them these songs?
Black Phillip did.
Oh, I guess that's true. They do keep saying that they keep talking to Black Phillip. They say that he doesn't talk back. You think they're just lying?
No, they say he talks back. Black Phillip told me you're a witch. Black Phillip told me you ate Sam, or...
I always just assume that they're being little jerks more than anything.
That too.
Yeah, but I guess that they definitely believe... I mean, they are little kids, but like when Thomasin starts going like, oh yeah, you think I'm a witch?
That's 'cause I be am. That very witch.
Like, she scares the shit out of her sister. As punishment.
Because she's a little wiener.
Everybody's fucking spitting on Thomasin. She's getting the...
Because mom hates you.
Yeah, that's what they say too. I mean, it is the best big sister comeback ever. Like, we've all... If you're an older sibling and you've had a younger sister especially, they're monsters, man. They're awful.
As a younger sister, I resemble that remark.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, did you ever pull that move where you just started crying because you didn't get what you wanted?
Probably.
Like, yeah. Hated that. And like, the cry was always so, like, at such a pitch that they were like, did you fucking hit your sister? Like, I did nothing. Like, I just didn't want to play with her because I'm doing my own thing.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, maybe horror, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow, they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know, even the weird ones. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site. And by gifts, I mean things I bought for me. We got a whole bunch of different mystery things. They have a really great mystery section on their website with puzzles, card games, and kind of like at-home escape rooms. So we have a whole bunch of those coming. I cannot wait for. They're definitely not going to make it till Christmas. But when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nightmare. That's uncommongoods.com/nightmare for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Man, one question I wanted to ask was, did God abandon them or did they give in to the devil? But, I don't think it necessarily matters. I think it's kind of both things. the real question I want you to nail down for me is, who let the devil in? Was it the kids or is it Thomason?
I think the irony of the movie is that the devil isn't let in until the last scene.
Mm-hmm.
So the family's like, what has cursed us and what curse us? And it's not the devil yet. The devil's in the periphery. Like, the devil is waiting. Exactly. Yeah. Like, the devil will be at your door when you're ready to sign. He's not going to beg you to sign the book. I think it's just like chipping away at them. The witch takes Sam. I don't know if that immediately, of course, like the witch is a worshiper of the devil, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I don't know if that's necessarily immediately like the devil was like, hey, why don't you use this baby for your broom fuel? You know what I mean?
They just happened upon.
Yeah. I think witches need broom fuel. Witches need baby gasoline.
Okay. Well, also, I said that I was very for this, like, killing baby scene in the movie. I think it's a great, I think they come out real hard, real fast. You're cool with it? Okay. I just thought you were asking me because you thought that maybe it was like, ooh, this is a little crazy.
Well, I was going to mention that in the screenplay, it's a little bit more graphic. Like, in the screenplay, she has like a big rounded blade and she holds it up, and then we're in a view from behind her and you see her bring it down on the baby.
Okay.
And there's a baby scream. Oh. You don't see the baby because we're like, it's obscured by her back, but there's a full out baby murder moment.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, the balls. I'm sure that was a fight that he did not win. He was like, okay, well, we are going to use baby goo on screen though.
Yeah. Like, we just see a witch hand just like, go, 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 go. Yeah. Just sort of like rubbing a baby, and then a knife gets introduced to the camera, like into the scene, and then we cut away to her churning.
Yeah,
baby
but
butter.
in the script, there's a total like schlink moment.
That's great.
I've
talked about it on the podcast before. Maybe it was just in Patreon, talking about favorite movie screening experiences. But when we saw The Witch, it was not a packed house when we saw it, and there were two older ladies who, like you were saying, probably only came because it was a period piece, and maybe there was some buzz about the Oscars or something. And when that knife came close to that baby, they were like, oh god, like they could not handle it.
I think it was the goo moment too. Like, I think it was just too much for them to comprehend.
I remember them whispering and talking.
What did they do to that baby?
Yeah, they were like, they were clearly like, should we go? Do we really want to see the rest of this? Like, okay, we'll give it 5 more minutes. They stayed for the whole movie, though, so I'll give them credit for that.
But to your question about the devil condemning them, how do you feel about it?
I feel the same way you do. Like, I don't necessarily... Like, there's a whole large conversation about God putting them through these trials like he would have with Job, and he's testing them or he's punishing them for their pride. But yeah, I think it's just a bit of bad luck, and yeah, they implode on themselves.
I think the forest is a really good visual for that. Like, they are at the edge, and like the devil is waiting right at the edge of the woods.
It's like, hey, you won't give up any time. I'm right here.
Exactly. There's actually a really great theory I got from this watch.
Okay.
And I want your opinion on it.
Let's go.
So near the end of the film, everything's going haywire. Sam's dead. Calum's dead. The kids are locked in the fucking shed because we don't know which one of them's a witch, but somebody's a witch because weird shit's happening. The kids are evil. And Mom has this, like, crazy moment where she wakes up and Sam and Caleb are, like, sitting in the corner.
Hell yeah.
And
they're like, don't wake Dad.
Yeah, Caleb says some creepy-ass shit.
Uh-huh.
She also breastfeeds Sam, which turns out to be a crow fucking pecking off her nipple, which is fucking jarring in a really great moment.
So good.
But he says... Caleb says, like, do you see this book before you?
Yeah. I brought a book that I love the way he talks. Like,
yeah, he's like,
he talks,
I
like
want
Black
you to
Phillip.
Read it to me.
Yeah, and she's like, sure, of course, yeah, anytime.
So that morning when she wakes up, her hair is down. And it's the only time we see her hair loose.
Was her hair not loose when she was, like, getting ready for bed and stuff?
No.
Mm.
And her hair is down, and she's, like, she's wearing, like, just her underclothes. And we don't know anything.
Yeah.
Because this is also, like, the penultimate scene where Dad is skewered by Black Phillip.
Uh-huh.
And killed in the massive log pile he's been building this whole movie.
This is the Dad equivalent of going out and mowing the lawn every single night of the week.
I love how much cinema uses the trope of, like, men going crazy. They're just angrily cutting logs.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
like, a horror movie favorite of mine.
It's great.
So mom comes out and she's just raging at Thomason, you know, fucking dad's dead, everybody's dead, it's just the two of them left.
Yep.
I don't think we even see Jonas and Mercy.
We don't, but
I'm assuming they're fucking gored inside the shed.
We see goat guts and stuff, yeah.
So
you think mom signed the book?
I think mom's a witch at that point.
Yeah. That's fun.
Because she let her hair down. Fucking wild and free. And then Thomason has to like kill her with a spade because she's strangling her to death.
Yeah, but she kind of comes out because, I guess there is a chance that like she wakes up and realizes what she's done.
Well,
and she blames
Thomason. Yeah, dad wakes up and he climbs over her and she's like awake with like scary ass eyes just staring out and her fucking gown is all bloody because her fucking teat's been bit off.
Uh-huh. Man, what a scene for him to have walked in on. I don't know if, I guess she was probably already in bed by the time he came back in.
Yeah, no, he didn't even see it, I don't think.
He was outside eating dirt, apologizing to God. I mean, like, these are great scenes. Like, the dialogue is incredible. Unfortunately, I did not write a lot of it down, and it's kind of hard to remember. But there are so many great moments between mom and dad, especially, talking about the gravity of the situation and about whether God has, like, punished them. Even just silent moments where she's in the grave.
Where
with
she climbs
Caleb.
In the grave.
Oh, God. Love this fucking movie.
Yeah, and the performances from everyone like is top notch. Everybody is doing their role so... Like, Ralph Ineson has never been better. Like, he fucking peaked in this movie.
It's
he
crazy.
Is phenomenal. Like, his voice was just fucking cherry-picked from the skies for this role.
Yeah, and he's great in everything you see him in now, but truly, this is the best that we've seen him in.
And Mom is so good as just, like, this shrill, judgmental woman.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, she makes you hate her so quickly.
But because, like, her performance is so good. And,
exactly.
Anya Taylor-Joy, like, even the fucking kids. Like, the boy that's playing Caleb...
Amazing. Like, just he should have got a supporting actor.
So
name, right?
Good.
Yeah, like the scene where it's kind of almost like an exorcism where they're all praying for him. And man, his prayer is truly awesome. Part of it comes down to the cinematography of it all too, right?
Because he's speaking to thine angels.
Yeah. I mean, like, let me into thine lap and stuff. Like, and then it takes a turn. Like, whoa, I don't know if he's praying to God here. Like, I think he's saying love in a way that I don't say I love God. Like, it's a lot. Like, he's clearly praying or talking to the witch at that point. Like, he is fully...
He took love potion number 9.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, and then he dies. It's great. It reminds me of that scene in the in Demon where he's finally, like, fully possessed by I shouldn't give away the end of Demon, but, like, there's a possession sequence in Demon at a wedding where he, like, fully goes off the deep end in front of everybody. It looks just like this. It's so good. And I think some of it really comes down to the actors understanding the dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah, the way that, like, if you've only heard Shakespeare read by your fellow teens in English class.
And you're like, we all have no idea what these words are.
Yeah, it's just word salad. It sounds awful. And you're like, why are we wasting our time with this? But, like, then you see performers do Shakespeare and, like, they understand the words. Like, it completely changes it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you understand it more because they understand it. Because some of it's just the emotion that they're conveying.
Yeah,
right?
It's where you kind of understand, like, oh, lip reading isn't just understanding words people are saying. It is the act of sounding out those words and what they mean.
It's truly incredible, this movie.
So another thing that's in the screenplay that's not in the movie is when Thomason first goes down to, like, bed down the goats, fucking Black Phillip is getting down with another goat.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be consensual.
Okay. That's crazy.
But the interesting thing, so the real reason I started reading the script before we started recording is I wanted to get the lyrics to Mercy's Black Phillip song.
Okay.
Because I couldn't really decipher anything other than, like, Black Phillip, Black Phillip, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know what she was singing. And it seems like she's kind of telling the story of the movie.
Wow.
Because she's talking about Black Phillip is, like, the king of the homestead.
Okay.
And that he's bedding down all the like, lady goats.
Huh.
And in the screenplay, he does.
Yeah.
But also, the second time she sings it when they're, like, coring corn or whatever, she talks about Black Phillip, like, knocking you over.
Wow.
Yeah, and, like, laying you on your ass. And that's... essentially how Ralph Ineson dies.
Yeah.
So.
And also, she's saying early in the movie, too, that, like, Black Phillip told me that you're the witch. Like, you're the one that's going to sign the book. Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
So an interesting moment with them, after Caleb comes back and he's possessed, they do that you know, that classic Salem Witch Trials moment where they're like, yeah. We've been cursed.
And they immediately believe it.
And they point to Thomasin. Like, that's essentially how every woman was put on trial, was a bunch of, like, younger girls were like, ow, I have itchiness and this one did it to me.
I had a dream.
What do you think is going on there? Do you think they're fussing? Do you think it's more just like Satanist tricky stuff? What do you think is going on there?
I don't know. It just seemed like kids being cruel. I think you're right. I think especially having, you know, heard a little bit more about the screenplay, like I think there's definitely a little bit more going on there. I don't think they necessarily know what they're playing with.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit of hysteria on both ends.
Okay.
Because there's a great moment once they're all locked inside the shed and Thomasin's like, are you guys witches? And they're like, no. Are you a witch? And she's like, no. And they're all just sitting there with the fucking devil goat.
Yeah, with the devil goat trying to fall asleep, waking up, finding a crazy ass witch drinking the goat blood milk.
No wonder why the fucking teat was bleeding. Witch has been nursing off of it.
Yeah, these witches are great. I love them. They're just like the witches from Lords of Salem, right? Classic witch, classic craggly witch.
Yeah, and I love the like the aging and the beauty thing. Like their true form is just like old and craggly and gnarly.
Oh, and Caleb sees them. Completely different woman.
Oh yeah, like top two witch hovels is Sleepy Hollow 1999 and this movie.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way that they didn't use the room 237 scene as inspiration for the scene where Caleb comes into the witch's hovel, right? Like the way that he's coming to her is very similar to the way that Jack Nicholson is coming to her.
Because her hand
woman.
Is all gnarly. It's
it
great.
It's good.
The casting on that witch, though, is so great because she's like beautiful, but she's scary.
Because she doesn't blink.
Yeah, and she's just like a little rough around the edges. Like she looks like she lives in the woods, but she's like drop dead gorgeous.
Well, yeah, and it's like you are way too pretty for living in a house that's built into a hill.
Yeah. Like your house is built of roots and mud.
I gotta tell you, there are like two things that would just utterly crack my fucking skull mentally if I came across them. One is like an us situation where I turned a corner and I was looking at myself like a doppelganger. Another
you want to get crazy.
Another would be if I got lost in the woods like Caleb does, or like the kids in the Blair Witch do, and then I just come across a perfectly built house in the middle of nothing.
That has never failed to scare me in fucking the Blair Witch Project when they finally come upon the house.
Yeah. And even then, it's like a dilapidated house. But you're like, there's no roads. There's no... How did you get any of these bricks here? Yeah. How did you do anything?
And that... Well, too, when he comes up upon the hovel, there's smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's an active fucking hovel. No.
No, thank you.
And he's compelled. He's walking towards it. And before that...
But he's scared. Like, well, he's still doing it, but he's like, I don't know
before
if I should.
Before that, he was a kid lost in the woods. Like, he was climbing through brambles and saying his prayers. Like, he was fucking terrified. And then he comes upon this and he can't help himself.
It's so good. Ugh. Oh, he's crazy horny too, right? Like, he's getting to that age. He's watching Thomasin wash laundry and he's just like, I gotta get the fuck out of this fucking... I gotta get back to the plantation, man. This movie also has just like the ultimate good for her ending, right? Where she finally signs the book, she meets the witches, they dance around a fire, she like laughs and cackles and rides off into the night.
Well, it's kind of great in the sense that like she's been the black sheep for so long and everybody's been saying she's a witch and everybody's been blaming her and accusing her and everything that's gone wrong. Uh-huh. And she was the most, like, she was the least sinning of all of them.
I agree.
She was the best of them all.
Yeah, that's true.
And they drove her to it.
That has to be also why he chose her, right?
Yeah, no, and it's maybe that she was the ultimate goal because she was the purest of them all. And so like everybody else was kind of getting picked off at the periphery, because for her to sign that book, she would have had to have been in that situation. She's alone.
Yeah.
She's the only one left. All of her family is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a good scene.
It's incredible.
Such a good scene. The fact that it's so dark, you can't really make it out, but fucking Black Phillip turns into like Lord Licorice from Candyman.
Lord Licorice.
Captain Morgan to some of us.
Yeah, and like the way that he talks too is incredible. Like just that whispery sort of seductive voice.
Well, and she's just like, I can't sign my name because of course she doesn't know how to read and write.
Such a great detail.
Guide thy hand.
Yeah. Oh, I love that fucking detail.
Yeah. I'm not really a film nerd, but in those moments, like especially when Black Phillip finally starts fucking talking, I'm just I'm all aboard.
Pure cinema, baby.
Pure cinema.
Yeah, it's like top-notch performances, incredible score that conveys an emotion. It's just like watching it is like a fucking magic trick. It's shot so goddamn well.
Yeah, and well, also too, this movie cuts through things.
Oh yeah.
Like I was saying, we don't really know what happens with Jonas and Mercy. That night, it's like they're locked inside the shed. We see that there's a naked, haggard witch in the corner, and then there's just screaming and noise, and it's the next morning, and we're just given so little. Mm-hmm. Like the information we're given is dead goats. And then we are just assuming everyone's dead. You know what I mean? Like it's yep. The film is really artful in that way. Like even in the witch's hovel in the beginning, like we don't see the baby get murdered. We don't really understand what she's doing with that broom.
No, but we get it.
And then we're like, is she flying? Was that a witch flying? And you don't quite know, and then we're gone from it.
Yeah.
It's pretty magical.
What an incredible way to go out to just the end of this movie. Like, the final shot is amazing. And yeah, I do think this movie, there was such just something in the air back in 2015 when it came out. I mean, like, if you look around and you try and find similar movies to it, like, you'll see that in 2015, Blackcoat's Daughter also came out. Not technically true. It premiered at TIFF, I think based on the success of The Witch and just sort of, like, what A24 was trying to shape their slates to look like. They bought it.
And yeah, then, that movie was sitting for a while.
Oh, 2017 is when it came out. It's crazy. But there wasn't a lot like The Witch at the time. I have talked to some people who, have seen this movie and, like, the audience for it were, like, teens. Like, it wasn't appealing to the standard Oscar crowd at the time. Like, a lot of people that went to go see this were younger viewers. And you can see so many other horror movies trying to be The Witch immediately after this. For better or worse.
I think you're right in that it shepherded in a new era of pacing and mm-hmm. what horror movies could be. And we brought back kind of like the Oscar horror film, the drama horror film. Like
sometimes
Hereditary wouldn't exist without The Witch.
Not at all. Absolutely. And obviously that's the same studio. Like, of course it was going to come from them. And, you know, sometimes people...
But, like, what else did A24 do that's very witch-like? The Green Knight wouldn't exist without The Witch.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it comes at night. Also,
everything that A24 is putting out.
Yeah, they put out Krisha the same year. I think 2 years later, It Comes at Night came out. And you know, it's The Witch. Like the pacing for The Witch, like how it's constructed, is very intentional for its story. Not every movie has to be like the elevated horror model. You know, like there's a specific reason why this movie looks the way it does, why it sounds the way it does, and why it's paced the way it is. And I think all of those decisions weren't just because it'd be fun and cool. It's because that's what this story needed. And I think that's what's so great about what Robert Eggers does. Sometimes it's weird and it doesn't like hit with everybody, but it's like, this story has to be told this way. It has to look this way. And it has to be these people saying these words.
Or it's not a folktale.
Or it's not a fucking folktale. God, don't you love a folktale in like the late fall? This was the right time to watch this movie.
Yeah, because the movie feels cold.
Yeah, that's true. Also, our house was cold. We turned up the fucking thermometer, the thermostat in the middle of the movie. Okay, well, obviously, this is a 4 out of 4 for me.
Oh, absolutely.
I assume it's the same for you.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I mean, if we had the podcast back in 2015, this probably would have been the number one movie of the year. I was looking at other movies that came out that year, and like, there's a few fun ones, but also, it's just kind of like a, I don't know. Could have done a top 5, top 10, maybe a little harder.
Yeah, this would definitely have been the top of my list.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about The Witch Cocktail in Cocktails from the Crypt.
Yeah, no, this was a really fun one. This one, obviously, like, you know, every drink in this book had a lot of evolution to it. So, like, actually, there were a couple where it was just like, first recipe, bang, we got it. Like, we'll try and play around with it a little bit, but came back to that original one. And yeah, this one we wanted to sort of make a drink that would be similar to the book, you know, something that that Black Phillip would have slid across the table to you rather than signing your name. Like, here's something decadent to cheers, join in the bad team.
Yeah, like a taste of what awaits you.
Yeah.
Like I was saying at the top of the show, like, it's creamy, it's sweet, it is decadent, like, it lives up to the word decadent, and it's not too heavy.
No, absolutely. This is the kind of drink that you would, if you had gone through a season of a bad harvest, or you're just like, you know, in the spring and leading up to the harvest, you're just eating pickled vegetables from last year.
And that sad-ass corn
grew. Oh, that sad-ass fucking corn, that fucking boring-ass bread that they're eating, and then fasting because they're so prideful. Definitely not because they don't have enough food to last for the summer. It's just because we're all bad Christians. This is, it's a mixture of amaretto and vodka. And espresso liqueur with the heavy cream. The garnish is really what kind of seals it and makes it like it gives it an aroma. Like you're in either a witch's hovel or like your tiny little pioneer house. And you get some fresh nutmeg on top of there.
I think it really sells that like autumny season though. Like the smell of nutmeg is, especially when you're using fresh nutmeg, it's just like straight up your nostrils. It's like into your pumpkin spice soul.
Oh my God. It's completely changed our baking and our cocktails. Like a lot of tiki cocktails have freshly grated nutmeg, and it took a little while for me to find it. We up here in Canada, we have a store called Bulk Barn, which I know none of our American friends have.
Y'all need to get on the bulk train. If you need like two pinches of something, you just go to Bulk Barn and you get two pinches of it.
You don't have to buy like a huge container of flaxseed or something. Like, you know, those weird ingredients for when you're doing like your diet baking. You're like, oh, I'm gonna try keto.
I'm gonna be keto for a week.
You know, it's like you can go and you can get like almond flour or coconut sugar or something, and you can just get a little bit of it rather than having to buy a $20 bag or something.
I'm gonna make all butter Twix bars. All butter, no flour.
And that keto diet can get real crazy real fast. But yeah, the freshly grated nutmeg has like really like elevated some of our drinks and our baking. I made a fucking pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving with freshly grated nutmeg that was just like absolute heaven.
We tried to eat like pumpkin other things after it, and we were like turning our nose up at them.
You're like, what is this garbage?
This does not taste like fresh pumpkin pie.
But there's also this great little added element that Kim brought to this cocktail. It's like an optional garnish. It's a couple dots of red food coloring as though you're sealing your pact with this drink before you have it. It's such a great little cocktail.
Well, yeah, like if just like a creamy cocktail in a cup doesn't quite scream horror movie to you, you can just add a little couple drops of blood on top and boof, there you go.
Yeah, it's actually real hard not to put drops of blood in every cocktail when you're making horror themed stuff because it seems like the most natural move, but you can't do it in every single one, and I promise you it is not in every single drink in the book.
Yeah, my first instinct is like, okay, how many cocktails are we going to put grenadine in, because grenadine looks like blood, and we had to limit ourselves.
Absolutely. The other thing too, like when it comes to the photo shoot, was like, how many photos are we gonna have fake blood in? And I gotta tell you, our photographer was very sad it wasn't every single photo. Every single photo that we were lining up, it was perfect, it looked great. We've got the lighting, like, ooh, yeah, it looks like it's like candle lit, it's like dark in our little witch hovel, and then just right before we take a photo, the photographer was like, so maybe just like a little bit of blood right here, maybe just a splash, just something. She really wanted to make sure that all of our drinks were like 1980s practical gore.
Yeah, I think she was just so excited for the project too, because she loves horror movies, and she was just so happy to be on such a cool project. She was just like, let's do gross shit.
Yeah, shout out to Reham. She was amazing, and she has been posting so much about this book on her Instagram. You guys should absolutely follow her. One, her photography is amazing. Like, outside of everything that she did for us, she is so talented. Follow her on Instagram. It's Reham, Reham _ food stylist. Her Instagram game's great.
Yeah, we also tag her in any photos of the cocktails on our Instagram. We'll tag her, so you can just click the tag.
Yeah, her behind-the-scenes photos are also really, really good. She does great highlights of like how we built the scene and like how it all came together.
Yeah, a lot of the awesome behind-the-scenes photos we have are thanks to her for just like, you know, clicking photos while we were like fussing with garnishes.
Yeah, so that's the Live Deliciously. You can check it out in Cocktails from the Crypt. Right now, you can pre-order that book anywhere cool books are sold. But the easiest way would be to find the link in the episode description or nofspodcast.com/go. There's links to everything there.
Join us for our launch parties virtually on November 27th in Winnipeg, Manitoba, our hometown, well, our current hometown, on November 30th, as well as Screenland Armor in Kansas City on December 7th. All of that info will be posted on our social media. Come join us. We're going to watch a movie and pair with a cocktail. It's going to be super fun.
We're going to be back again next week talking about another movie that inspired one of our favorite cocktails in the book. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.